Hello everyone and welcome back to the Donkey's Garage for Season 2, Episode 17, Racing in Spain. This was the race that took place at the Circuit of Catalunya, located in Barcelona, in the outskirts. It's a quite a rather classic race in the calendar. It's been, I believe, since the 80s, and it has been a constant. It has been rather famous, I would say, because it held the winter testing in the past before it was moved to Bahrain, and probably in the future will be moved again. I'm not really sure whether that was a good call, because during winter testing, the idea, of course, is that you want to test to see what the development of the car looks like. If you have done a good job really bringing that new car on the track. And usually you want the track where you do the development to be near close to the factory, so that you can try and ship rather different parts, different parts of the car in easily. So if you, I don't know, if you have your factory in Enstone, you can easily have a flight, have new parts shipped in during the night and test them the next morning, especially now that the winter testing has been reduced to just under a week. So it's something really critical. If you have to ship them all the way to Bahrain, it's something a bit more critical. But anyway, it's a track that is fairly fast. It is now more or less clocked at 1:11.12. Race pace, you're looking at 1:13, 1:14. In the past, the second to last corner was the one that caused most excitement. It was a really fast right-hander that led into the right corner, straight into the straight. And then it was modified after 2006 to put a chicane that would slow down very much the cars. Some of you who might have played the F1 game will know it is a very slow, very, very slow corner where you arrived coming out of in sector three as you enter, you are the back straight. Then you used to have again another section, very sinuous section with two corners, then a right hander that is very tricky on the stability of the car. You are very likely to understeer if you put too much steering input, and you're also kind of an uphill, so it's quite difficult in how you put the balance of the car there. And then you would arrive to this nice zigzag that would lead then to the last corner, and then straight into the main straight. And now it has reverted back to the original layout of the track, removing that last chicane, which is the same layout used in MotoGP. So it has made considerably faster the lap race, of course, because I mean it was a very slow section. Now the track is predominantly a fast corner layout. You need cars that adapt well to very high speed corners, and I think these in a way has been the key aspect in the strength of this track in the past, which had different types of corners that would allow you to test the performance of your car in different settings. You had a fairly decent straight, you also had very fast, very high speed corners, and then you had a section with very, very, very slow corners, namely the chicane. And so it would allow the teams to really see the strength of the car and the weaknesses, of course, of their cars during winter testing. Now, removing these slow corners, I feel like they're a bit more perhaps sensed, or it's perhaps narrower as a track in terms of what the feedback is for the team especially, but it's still a very, very, I think, enjoyable track. I would say to race there, it looks very enjoyable, But to watch it, I am not sure it has been the key track in which many things happen. I mean, I remember in the past some glorious races, especially by Fernando Alonso in 2012, with an amazing start off the line, which would then lead to his last victory in Formula One. It was in 2013, sorry, not 2012. And then some memorable moments like the accident between Lewis Hamilton and Rosberg going into 1, 2, 3, into the fourth corner, where Lewis took out Rosberg, and both of them ended in the gravel, sacrificing the race, and actually led to Verstappen's first victory, his maiden victory. So a long history, a track that has quite a past. It's been, of course, home also to some memorable races with the old times, with Mansell, with Prost. But nowadays, I think it still retains some of the glory, but just the action on track is a bit limited. It's improved perhaps compared to the past, where cars were very difficult to follow. We saw some overtakes on track, but still a track that doesn't necessarily test the limits of the car or the drivers excessively. There are nice runoffs. There are no areas where mistakes are terminal, so to speak. And so I think you can fairly say that you are likely to finish the race. Indeed, today we didn't see any DNFs, which is surprising. No safety cars. And I think overall, this was a rather boring race. And I personally found it boring, and I feel that my opinion is corroborated in a way by the fact that I spoke to a friend of mine who doesn't like Formula One, couldn't care less about Formula One, and she told me that she ended up watching it because she was at she was somewhere where they were playing the race, and she watched a bit and said, "Oh my gosh, this is so boring." So in terms of the show that you're providing, and especially if you're trying to attract new customers, new fans, new spectators, is something that you really shouldn't be very pleased about. If a weekend ends with people saying, "Well, that was boring," it's not exactly an ideal situation. It's like, I mean, a very simple scenario is where people are bored on a Sunday and they switch on the TV and they're looking at what's happening, what's there on TV, and they've got Roland Garros at the moment, they've got probably football, and perhaps in the evening they've got something else, whatever. You've got the Tour de France, you've got the cyclings here and there, so you've got quite a bunch of offers at the moment, and you put Formula One and you say, okay, I'm going to see what's happening, and then it turns out that you've got Verstappen with a lead of 20 seconds to the second driver, and nothing is really happening, and you'd probably be like, "Oh, this is boring, I'm going to switch and watch something else." And this is exactly what happened to Ariadne, who thought, "Well, this is boring. Why does Marin probably talk so much about Formula One and he finds it so exciting if it's just cars going around the track?" And, I mean, she probably is right, to be honest. So today was not really a nice example in that sense. Probably was not the perfect sample to for someone who would watch Formula One just once or for the first time. So, and on that note, just a quick covering of what happened in qualifying, which I think was quite hectic overall. I was really surprised to see what the qualifying, I mean, overall, it just seemed to be nonsense what was happening, quite unexpected results. And why is that? Well, namely, because you had a bunch of drivers who were on Q3, which don't necessarily belong to the top teams. So Sainz had a rather average qualifying. He qualified second, but his teammate Leclerc was knocked out in Q1 and just qualified 17, and then he changed some parts and then started from the pit lane, which one wonders what happened. I mean, if your teammate is P2, they were not looking very sharp either, but I mean, they looked fairly decent, definitely not to be knocked out on Q1. You wonder what happened. Big news in that sense is that Ferrari brought a significant update to Barcelona with a new set of side pods with a revised underfloor, which are mimic, I would say, in a way, Red Bull style, with a nice kind of down sloping side pods. And they have abandoned, I think, largely or substantially the bathtub design. Of course, they cannot totally erase the bathtub design because it's just an evolution. The way the engine is designed, probably the cooling and stuff like that, will determine largely the appearance of the car, how the side pods can be designed. And of course, they cannot make them shrink too much because you will have the radiators located on the side and you will have the cooling and all the pads which cannot be just moved so easily. But quite a substantial modification that was very apparent to the naked eye. And so the both drivers, they tested it on Friday. One of them had the old spec, the other had the newest spec to see, compare them. And actually, this is very important because, as I said, Barcelona used to be the key track to test winter development. It is a track that offers a nice set of wide range of corners, which allow you really to develop, to see the development of the car and to see the criteria, to see data that is relevant. And of course, I think I've mentioned in the past, these older tracks that have a lot of history in the calendar are key to the teams because they have gathered so much data over the years that even though the cars have changed and the layout might change, they have so much data, they have a bank of data, they have like a pool, an immense pool of data, that they can really look at the new data and really compare to how it's doing in the past and really assess it properly, as opposed to a track which is completely new where you cannot really tell whether the pieces that you've brought to this specific track are working or not. With one exception, of course, is Monaco, which is just a nightmare, even though it's been on the calendar forever, but it's one in a kind, so you can't really use it to really compare data in a relevant way, in a very purposeful manner. With that said, Sainz second, Lando third, which I wonder how did that happen, or McLaren that seemed to have revived suddenly. It started really at the back of the grid at the beginning of the year. It seemed that it was going to be a wash of a year. And then suddenly they seem to have brought some updates, especially to the side pods and perhaps the underfloor, substantial modification updates, which have brought a car that is really, really at ease in high-speed corners. Lando was saying the car really, really feels comfortable in high-speed corners. So Barcelona seems to have really clicked in that sense. And as I said, with a new layout, is even better. Then Gasly fourth, which again is an Alpine that has revived, that is kind of finding its nice balance at the moment and is really, I think, on a positive trend, especially after the Monaco pace, after the Monaco results. Probably it's a breath of fresh air to the team, is motivation, and that is exactly what they needed. I was a bit skeptical about if the Monaco attitude of the hype of coming out of Monaco was going to last long, but it seems that the car is actually working well even in high speed corners and slow speed corners like Monaco. So it seems that the car is moving in the right direction, and especially one aspect that needs to be stressed is the reliability of the engine, which was a significant issue last year with 13 DNFs for Fernando Alonso, something that was becoming an issue that was just not something that you could hide anymore. It was something that really was fundamental in his car. It's something that appears to be solved so far. They haven't had any major issues reliability wise. Then we have to mention Hamilton, who came fifth in qualifying, which again is a new car, is a spec B Mercedes, as I mentioned in the Monaco episode, which was the previous one. They have adopted also the Red Bull style side parts, perhaps just as it happens with Ferrari. The development is hindered by the design of the engine cover and the cooling, so they're rather limited on what they can do. They can definitely modify this zero pot philosophy they had, but they're still limited substantially how far they can go with their updates. So they brought a substantial update, as I say, to Monaco, but of course Monaco being such a weird track, they couldn't really test whether the updates were really working or not, or whether it was just one specific track improvement. And it turns out that Barcelona just gave them the perfect scenario, and they actually, I believe, succeeded in their quest, because the car is really working well under these conditions, under high speed corners conditions, really, really working well. We saw a car that was stable, that was not the car that used to be, especially last year, and I believe you can even say at the beginning of the year. This is somewhat striking if you put it into perspective, because Lewis Hamilton started the weekend saying Barcelona is going to be a wash for us. It's definitely not going to be working. We are just assuming we're going to be out of Q1. And then it turns out that they qualified P5 and P12, and then the race they did really, really well. So you wonder whether this was just trash talking, which is very likely, because Hamilton is quite a master at that. He's very, very acute in how to play the mindset, to overplay it or to downplay it, especially with regards to vis-a-vis the competitors. And then comes Stroll in sixth during qualifying, with a rather mild qualifying. The Astons were looking quite bad, I would say. They were looking just not really sharp. They didn't get any purpose sector whatsoever. And already in the first sector, they were losing 2-3 tenths. With the second sector, another 2-3 tenths. And then on the final sector, again, a bit more. So overall, not the best truck. Stroll qualified P6, but it felt like it was more or less the best they can do. And this very specific occasion, we witnessed Alonso making a very, very costly mistake into Q1. It was still a bit wet at the beginning. It was a bit spitting with rain, and Alonso was coming into the last corner. He placed the car just in this, I would say, part of the track that was still wet. I wouldn't say it was completely wet, but it was just still humid, though it was still not perfectly dry. The car kind of lost a bit of traction there, and that he had to correct the front in order to avoid going straight into the gravel, which is at the end of the day what happened. I mean, the car was going to spin otherwise, but he went straight into the gravel, and then by doing so he caused substantial damage to the floor, and as a result his qualifying was compromised altogether. He went back into the pits, and we saw him struggling to get into Q2, and then Q3 he only made one run. The team was working really, really hard to try to mend the underfloor, putting tape here and there, but it was just not enough, which meant that he could only qualify P9, which I think they were not going to qualify anywhere near the top three. Probably they could have managed maybe P4 at best, but I think very, very much at best. They had quite a substantial set of competitors, especially with Mercedes looking really sharp at this specific truck. Then Ocon again with placing seventh, which I think is in tune with the results of Gasly. Perhaps Gasly a bit sharp in that sense, but I mean they're quite comparable results. Hülkenberg was the big surprise. He came eighth with a unmodified and with a Haas that was not updated, still using the old layout with the bathtub style, which I think it's not something to disregard, especially because if you put it into perspective, the bathtub design was the one that really worked at the beginning of last year when the new set of regulations begun, and really Ferrari set the pace back then with that design, which still shows that it was still quite competitive in the track where it was first tested, and it continues to be so, but just during race pace it loses all possibilities to fight at the front. And that is exactly what happened, because Hülkenberg during the race just collapsed to the back with quite a pitiful result, I would say. Not exactly, I mean, not something you would want. As a team, he started P8, finished P15, which, I mean, at the end of the day, is a bad result, is a negative result. But, I mean, into perspective, it was something that was written in the walls, so already the victory was to qualify P8, a good result for him, especially outperforming his teammate, who seemed to be lately a bit off pace, Magnussen, with some good performances here and there. Quite an impressive overtake at Monaco, as I said last week, but overall just seems to be struggling with the car. He qualified P17, and then during the race again he just didn't seem to improve, just coming P18 at the end, so he even lost a position. Quite annoying, I would say. And then finishing the top 10 was Piastri, which underperformed compared to his teammates, especially knowing that Lando was third. But 10 is still good. It still shows that, I mean, he's performing rather well. He's there. He's not as good as Lando, but also, again, Lando is a very strong driver, and also he's very, very well suited to the team. He feels very comfortable with the team, and it's just this kind of it shows the difference between the two of them. I believe Piastri, maybe with one extra year to accommodate to this new team, will be a bit closer to Lando in terms of performance. Then 11th, which was the big underperforming driver again, and that is really, really heartbreaking to say, was Perez, qualifying P11, getting knocked out of Q3. Q2 was quite difficult for him, just didn't find the pace, he was just not feeling it all together, and that showed right away, as one can see from his qualifying results. So his race was one of really trying to march through the field and reach as soon as possible P3, P2. During the race, it was going to be a hard one, and as I will comment later, it did not really work as planned or as good as he might have wished for. He did still gather some points, but not exactly what you want when you're fighting the likes of Verstappen for the championship. You cannot afford to be having such horrible races as he had in Monaco, and then having a rather average, rather bad race in Spain again, where you're not fighting with your teammate for P1. And then lastly, the top 12 was Russell, underperforming compared to his teammate Hamilton. Hamilton felt, I think, far more comfortable. Russell was complaining about the front. He would just seem to be complaining about the tires not being at the right temperature, which is always an issue with these Pirelli tires. If they are not at the right temperature, the car just doesn't have any grip, and you feel like you're skating, which is, I believe, exactly what happened to him, and thus the result of P12. Having said that, I would say that more or less this kind of awkward qualifying then sorted itself out into the race, because usually 66 laps gives you the time to kind of reorganize into the natural order of things. And so what we saw was a race style was rather conservative. No one dead too much, no accident, no safety car whatsoever. Just an incident between Lewis and Norris, into corner two. Norris was on the outside, was on the outside of corner one, and then in the inside of corner two, as it is natural. And then he had a contact with Hamilton, and Hamilton knocked out his end plate on his front wing, which then sacrificed his whole race because he had to go. Norris had to go back to the pits, fit a new front wing, and as a result, he just got kind of relegated to the back, where he was fighting all the way through the race at the back with no pace whatsoever. Probably some damage to the floor also, I have to say, because it was normal that he just was so far off the pace. He should have still made it back to the kind of midfield, but he didn't. He just got at the back and he finished P17, which is really, really a shame, knowing how well his qualifying went. I would say Hamilton, I mean, he was to blame in that sense. It was a racing incident, but it was a very costly racing incident, especially if you take into account how bad it ended for Norris. I feel Hamilton always has issues when he's fighting with all the drivers. I recall Alonso complaining about Hamilton at Spa last year, saying, "Well, Hamilton only wins when he's at the front, when he's got to fight body car to car, he always ends up having contact with the other driver, and somehow he always comes out on top or unharmed, which is quite surprising, quite lucky also for him, I must say." And again, this was a scenario where exactly that happened. For Hamilton starting from P5, he finished P2, which was impressive performance by the team, really good overall. As I said, this new car with new designed side pods were looking really, really sharp. The car is looking stable, really something to be worried about, I would say, if I were Aston Martin, because I mean, they have already overtaken Aston Martin in the Constructors' Championship. They are now P2 in the Constructors' Championship with a car that is supposed to be horrible, 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 horrible to drive, which you wonder, if it's a very bad car, what would they be if they had a good car? Probably much closer to Red Bull. So Aston Martin is now P3 in the Constructors' Championship, which is annoying. They have really to gather momentum, I hope, in Canada, and bring some updates to regain that P2. It's really important, especially for next year, in terms of financials, in terms of the money they received for finishing P2. They really need it in order to fight if they want to have a fighting chance next year against Red Bull. Then Russell, who did quite a good race, I mean, very good, I would even say, coming from P12 to P3, especially after a Saturday, a qualifying that was not the best you would want, after an incident between Russell and Hamilton in the main straight, where the both of them collided, and I'm not really sure why. I mean, if you see the footage, Russell has the slipstream of Albon, and Hamilton has the slipstream of Russell, and the two of them are, of course, trying to get the maximum top speed. They're on their fast lap, but they're very too close, and Hamilton is coming like a rocket. And then Hamilton decides to go for the pass on the inside of Russell, and Russell is like, "No, no, no, where are you going? You're definitely not overtaking me. I'm on my fast lap, you're going to stay behind and you will wait for me to finish." And Hamilton decides that that is not going to be a possibility, so he goes for it. Russell waves a bit, and then as he is side to side, Russell kind of pushes Hamilton. Hamilton holds the position, and they ended up colliding, having damage to one another. Lewis lost the front wing, I believe, but had damage to the front wing. I think it was the end plate also, which was damaged. And I, at that moment, I wonder, what on earth are they doing? I mean, what on earth? And in my opinion, Hamilton is to blame because Russell was in front of him. They were both on the fast lap. First of all, the team should not allow this to happen. So it's the team is at fault to begin with. But given that Russell was ahead of him, the rule in teams is the one that is ahead usually has priority over the other. And I wonder how Hamilton did not accept these as a fact and just let Russell finish his lap and then go for it. I mean, he was not under pressure, and of course he had a very good slipstream because there was this nice train of DRS at that moment. But I mean, it's something that it happens. You're going to have to give up that, and of course some benefit that goes associated with it. But too bad. I think Hamilton is to blame. He should have stayed behind and definitely not tried to go for the pass, overtake Russell on track, and of course during qualifying work it could have ended up very badly, especially if you go you put one tire on the grass and then you end up having kind of a Rosberg Hamilton 2.0 as it happened back, I think it was 2014. So not a good scene, not a good performance by the two of them, but I would say Hamilton more to blame than Russell. But Russell had a good race, I guess. They had quite a heated debriefing on Saturday. And Toto, I would imagine, would have told both drivers to get their crap together and perform well on Saturday. On Sunday, don't cause any trouble for the team. And I think overall they did a good result in that sense because they kept nice and quietly P2, P3. And that's what they did. I mean, they just didn't have a bite at each other. And amassed a really good amount of points for the team, which are precious, especially to really secure that P2 in the championships. I mean, not secure, but really get the lead on Aston, and then also collect a ton of data with regards to the new design of the car. They really need all that data in order to continue the development and push the car forward. Then Russell, P4, who was coming, of course, from P11. Not a very shiny race. I mean, he is of course running on a rocket. But yet, I mean, yeah, he came P4, but it felt not quite enough. I mean, he should have somehow ended up on the podium, and he didn't. So I would say not good enough. I mean, good race, but not good enough. Verstappen, of course, won the race with a 20-second lead, I said. If you compare now the two of them, they are, I think, miles away. And it's something that I would be very worried if I was Perez. I would be very, very worried how secure, how confident, how narcissist Verstappen feels. He was so confident out of qualifying. He spoke to the microphone and to Marjane, and he was absolutely staggering in his confidence, how he just said, I mean, that there was no doubt coming into Barcelona how strong we were going to be here. And it was just right around the neighborhood, really getting that, securing that pole position. Yeah, quite annoying, to be honest. To see that superiority, I mean, it's something that really makes the races boring, and it's just not good for the spectacle overall, I would say. With that said, Sainz P5, and if you hear that P5, you probably feel disappointed. He started P2, he had an uneventful race. It was just signs. Off the grid, he got rather well off the grid, got the slipstream to Verstappen, got back side by side, first corner, he's on the outside. And then Verstappen did, of course, the defense by the book. He just made it wide and kind of cut across the track in order to really block Sainz on the outside, so as to leave Sainz with no option either to fall back or else go on the runoff area of the track. And Sainz, of course, just kept it quietly and just stayed behind. And then you wonder, shouldn't Sainz have been more aggressive? And I would say yes. I would say yes, because we saw some drivers overtake in that specific corner, and they did the outside, and they did it as I would have done it. And I say I would have done it with a pinch of salt, of course, because I wasn't in his position, and I'm not driving a Formula One. But I would have been more aggressive and held it on the outside, and then gone with a Senna attitude and saying, I'm going to stick to the outside. If you want to pass me, if you want to hold the racing line, too bad, you're going to have to make contact with me, and both of us are going to sacrifice the race. Especially, Sainz hasn't got anything to lose. You're not fighting for P2, for P3, for P1 in the championship. So you might as well just be aggressive as it comes and really show your teeth to Verstappen. Of course, it is also an investment towards the future, because if he knows that you're willing to have an accident in order to overtake him, next time he sees you in the mirror, he's going to remember about it, and he's going to think twice whether he wants to be as aggressive as he is. And that is exactly what my reasoning is. I would have kept the inside line, and I would have been like, this is my car, you're not coming anywhere near, I mean, you're not going to get my racing line, I'm going to have the inside, and the next corner we'll see what happens. But here, if you want the racing line, you're going to have to make contact with me. And that is exactly what Sainz didn't do. Quite disappointing. Well, as for the rest of the race, I am a bit tempted to say that Ferrari messed up strategy again. He was starting on these softs, and he looked like he was going to go soft, soft, medium, I would have said, to stops. Verstappen was starting on medium, so he was going to go long and then hard, which made sense. I mean, he's got a very competitive car, so he can afford to put the mediums, kind of have a longer stint and then go hard and go easy on the end. Probably wouldn't have encountered any trouble whatsoever, and that's exactly what happened. He was just had a really relaxed race. Then Sainz pitted very early to swap the tyres, to fit some, I believe it was some mediums, of some hards. And then he was over the radio saying, what on earth are you bloody doing again with the strategy? I mean, if we put soft, you have to go soft, soft, medium in order to have the best performance, which is not what they did. They ended up having, I don't know what kind of strategy, but they pitted far too early, far, far too early. I mean, I don't know what they did. He was perplexed about it. He went over the very radio and questioned the team, and the team were like, ah, I don't know, man. As it is becoming customary from Ferrari again. Even with the new leadership, they seem to be as lost as they are always. I mean, they are a meme. They're becoming a kind of synonym of failure, when it is a team that was in the past synonym of apps of victory, of success, which is quite disappointing. Especially, I feel quite attached to this team. I mean, it's a historical team. It's a team with such a strong, rich background, and you see them, I don't know, racing like they are amateurs sometimes. It's quite disappointing. Anyways. Stroll, P6 with Alonso, P7. Both of them, as I said before, they were not looking really sharp. The car didn't look with much pace, so P6, P7 looked like the best they could do. Alonso had a bit of a more troublesome race. He was coming from P9. He seemed to be in the middle of nowhere all through the race when he was pitting, when he was fitting softs. No pace whatsoever with the soft, which is surprising, especially suffering from, I believe, overheating on his front tire, especially his front left, as it was the case also for Russell's. So not a good weekend. And then at the end of the race, the two of them came together in a nice little pack, and Alonso went over the radio and said, "Hey guys, I know I am behind Stroll, but I'm not going to attack. I'm just going to come close to him so that I can protect from the guys behind." And that's what they did. They came together to the racing line with 8/10 of a second apart, but they didn't really fight. So it was a nice, I would imagine, a nice gesture by Alonso, which of course very well premeditated, because he's basically saying to the team, "I'm offering you, you know, this nice scenario where there's no fight between the drivers. I'm not going to cause any tension, unnecessary tension between the drivers." And at the end of the day, Stroll had a stronger weekend than me, so he might as well just take the P6 and really get those points, because why not? I mean, he had a better qualifying, he had a better race, so at the end of the day, he deserves it. And there was no reason why to call all team orders to switch positions when they're not really fighting for anything. I would only add, if I had to add something, really picky about it, I would say that those points difference between P6 and P7 could come in handy if he's fighting for P2 at the end of the year with Perez for the championship. But I mean, sometimes you have to sacrifice in order to have peace within your motorhome. And then Ocon, Zhou, Gasly, they had quite an uneventful race again. Zhou had a pretty good one, had contact with Tsunoda in turn one, which I don't agree with the penalty. Tsunoda received a penalty for that. And I believe Zhou played the odds and tried for nothing. Tsunoda did the same defense Verstappen played, or Lewis has played in the past, or Alonso even has played in the past, which is you come into the first corner and then you kind of run across the racing line in order to block your adversary who is on the outside of turn one, and then he's on the inside of turn two. So exactly what happened between Verstappen and Sainz. And then Tsunoda did that, and somehow the stewards deemed that to be forcing a driver off the track, which I absolutely think that is not the case. It's just a strong defense, but it's not something that should be banned, or that should be restricted, that should be punished. So I disagree with that. Zhou played it. He cried over that, and I guess he got the upper hand. But it's a bad precedent again by the stewards. Not a good call, I would say. Which actually brings me to one topic, when I'm going to make a parenthesis, which is the fact that Günther Steiner complained about the penalties that have been handed over by the stewards lately, and especially with regards to the whole situation in Monaco with Leclerc being in the tunnel, where he couldn't really avoid being an annoyance, being a disturbing Norris in his fast lap. And then Günther Steiner suggested that stewards should be professional, because it's Formula One is the only sport where apparently stewards are not professionals. I didn't know all the other sports had professional stewards, but he suggested that, and it seems to be quite a strong argument to make, because sometimes and very often they do make calls which call into question whether they've ever stepped on an F1 car, which is not the case, and definitely they haven't stepped on a racing car at all, because they would know that sometimes it's just what happens. You cannot really sanction everything the way they do. You're racing, and sometimes it's just how things happen, and it's part of racing. So just as here, I think it's just part of racing. It's just a part of your set of tools that you have to really cover an adversary from overtaking you. And I don't see anything substantially negative deemed or sufficient to be sanctioned. But it's a good debate, and it's something that maybe should be looked in more depth in the future. And then Ocon Also with Gasly, I would put the two of them together. They kind of collapsed as the race went by. I mean, they looked strong, and not, don't get me wrong, they were still looking very competitive, far more competitive than they started the year, which is a nice step forward. With that, I have to say that Gasly received a penalty, great penalty, worth 2x3 places for obstructing Sainz and obstructing Russell during qualifying, which meant he went from P4 to P10 on the grid. His race, or his weekend was compromised thereon. Both drivers, they look fairly decent, but just I guess not quick enough at the end of the day. Alonso and Ocon, they had a situation at the main straight, more or less in lap 40, between 45 and 50, when Alonso overtook Ocon in the main straight. Ocon, I think, was very, very aggressive in the way he defended on Alonso, where he went all the way against the kind of pit wall, pushed Alonso to cross the pit lane exit line on the dirty side, to run over the dirty side of the track, and still though Alonso made it. It seems quite unnecessary to make that much of an aggressive move, because at the end of the day he's got you, and by doing so you just seem to be, I don't know, being overly aggressive. This reminds me actually the famous overtake between Lewis Hamilton and Vettel, where Vettel pushed Hamilton on a crazy dive into turn one, where Vettel defended like a lion, moving out of braking, which is of course illegal, and caused Hamilton to go all over the grass in order to overtake him. It is that kind of situation which becomes excessively dangerous, and that main street is actually prone to that kind of overtake, where drivers are or try to protect by being overly aggressive, pushing the driver on the dirty side of the track. And yet at the end of the day, I mean, if they have a slipstream, they are going to come first and to the braking zone. So you might as well not push it that much, stay on your racing line and try to get him in into turn two. That's what I would do. But with that said, last driver to mention was Leclerc, who, as I said, started from the pit lane, had a very, very difficult race ahead of him. And again, the pit wall kind of messed up the whole race, I would say. Or at least I didn't understand really what they did. They started from the pit lane with a set of hards, which I would have said should have lasted at least 35, 40, 40, even 45 laps, and then switched to softs if the deck was low, and probably as all the teams had, they would have to switch 2x to go into the pits 2x, which is what happened most of the teams, so probably lasts until lap 30-ish. And then set of softs, and then another set of softs. But what did they do? They had Leclerc running last. He started going through the field on that set of hards, and then just in lap 17, they pitted him. And I wonder why. I mean, his set of hard tires should be, almost new, almost as good as new. So he was really, really early. They pitted him for softs, and then threw him at the back of the grid again, to go all the way through the grid, through the grid, indeed, through the field, and yeah, you've lost all the competitive advantage. And then he went through the field, and of course there was a lot of traffic. He was not being competitive at all, and just had an awful race altogether. And then he pitted for another set of softs towards the end of the race, which then threw him back at the back again, which then made, or created, the scenario where he had to go again through the field in order to kind of recover. So I don't understand what they were really pursuing with all that, but the strategy in Ferrari continues to be critical, and I'd say that in a negative way. It continues to be deficient, and it's not something that you can allow. If you have a car that is not as competitive as the others, at least have the strategy spot on. But if you have the strategy, the car, and everything just not working, you might as well just give up altogether, stop racing, stay at home, have a beer, and just watch the racing on TV. But this is not the spirit of Ferrari. And if you watch like the if you watch movies like Le Mans 66, you watched the Steve McQueen's version of Le Mans, you see all these races with Ferrari in their prime age fighting for big stuff, and then you see these, you wonder where the hell is Ferrari. You just get pissed off at that. And I mean, at the end of the day, what they're just creating is the scenario where both drivers are going to get frustrated with Ferrari and they're just going to leave altogether. Sainz will probably go elsewhere, and Leclerc, I believe, is not very far off from just getting sick from Ferrari and saying, goodbye, there is no way whatsoever I'm going to be fighting for P1 in these circumstances. And then you see, I mean, both drivers are frustrated, and Leclerc, you see in his face, he's just... he's not sparkling. I mean, he just looks demotivated. So, with that said, I think I've covered the weekend. Just to make one last comment, Verstappen, awfully, awfully strong. I mean, impressive. He's been solid, as solid as he could possibly be, which is a testament to how good as a driver he is, but also how good the car is. It's reliable. I mean, no cracks whatsoever in the team. Good pit stop, good strategy, good engine, good chassis, good driver. Everything is just in tune, and I think it's going to be really, really hard to get the championship from him again this year. Really glad. The podium was again a classic Verstappen-Hamilton. They were in pretty good terms. I mean, not as good terms as he is with Alonso, but I mean, fairly good terms. And then the interview was done by Rosberg, who had to interview Hamilton. And the first comment Rosberg made to Hamilton was, hey, how nice to be back here. Of course, making reference to their infamous incident in 2014, which I thought was funny, especially coming from Rosberg, because it clearly shows that they have not really processed psychologically the effects of that race. I think that was kind of the turning point in the relationship of those two drivers within the team. And there onwards, it kind of got bitter and bitter to the point that they all were not talking to each other at all at the end of 2016. With that said, a piece of news, perhaps worth mentioning. The Spanish GP, as I said, has been traditionally held in Barcelona, the Circuit of Catalunya. In the past, there was only one time where it was held at the racetrack at Jarama in Madrid, which, as I covered it during the episode which I did with my mother, because she was involved in the organizing the MotoGP events there, so she knew a bit about the Jarama track. Now there is a bid again to revive the whole Madrid GP project, and because it was the Spanish GP, there was a lot of talking about it, especially during the weekend. Apparently, they're getting closer to really make a proposal as to how this track would look, as to how the whole thing would look like. Madrid is really keen on making that happening, and we all know that it is practically impossible to have Madrid and Barcelona at the same time. So, if one wins, the other will have to lose. And it continues to be the case that Madrid doesn't really seem to have the venue to hold a GP there. They're talking about IFEMA, which is the center for conferences in Madrid. They're talking about expanding the Jarama. They're talking about making a street circuit with the main street being the Paseo de la Castellana, racing just in front of the stadium of Real Madrid, which would be something really, really wished by the owner Florentino Perez of Real Madrid, who wants the spectacle really to reach the doors of the stadium, so as to attract customers, of course, and popularity, blah blah blah. So with that said, I believe it's all I have to say. And now the question is, who was the donkey of the weekend? And I mean, I am very, very sad to announce that, in my opinion, the donkey's award has to go to Alonso. And it seems harsh because, as he said on his during his interview, post-qualifying interview, I am a human, I made mistakes, and I made a mistake on Saturday. I placed the car somewhere where I shouldn't, and as a result, I went in on the on into the gravel, into the gravel trap. So that really compromised all his weekend. The race just didn't look competitive. So I am tempted to say he is the donkey. The rest of the drivers, no one really made any major incident. At the back, it was fairly calm. No, I mean, perhaps you could say Sargeant, he didn't do anything whatsoever during the weekend. It was really, really kind of gloomy over him. It was just grey, not shining at all. But I mean, at the end of the day, no one really had a major issue. And I would say Perez could be again said to have had a bad weekend, having a bad Q2. But I think the biggest loser of the weekend was Alonso, in that sense, where he compromised his weekend very early on in the start of the weekend. So I am going to settle on that, Alonso Donkey's Award. I know that some people are going to disagree with me, so leave a message if you feel like I am not being objective, if I'm not weighing things properly, if I am not being correct in my assessment. And with that said, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much. As always, share, subscribe, and I will continue to do this with my whole heart, as always. Next race, Canada. Big one. Aston Martin is supposed to bring substantial updates there. It's a track that should suit them a bit more with high-speed straight and then slow corners, which should be a bit more suitable to their car. Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. A race I look forward. I know Lucas, for instance, is a big fan of Canada. Usually a lot happens. It could rain. It is a track that really has been home to very good Grand Prix. Maiden victory, of course, to Lewis Hamilton. So a lot coming on there. And I absolutely look forward to it. So having said that, have a good evening and see you in 2 weeks' time. Have a good evening.